Research notes on the commensal plants of the nearby jungles, especially those which exist in the corrupted pockets off the main paths. Here, tentacles verge the pathway, but do not reach onto it. It has become common habit, though we would advise one not to do so, to simply step off the path and into the grips of these admittedly habit-forming members and tendrils of the vaster creatures beneath. These long, searching membranes affix to prehensile appendages. Presented with the opportunity, they will seek to sexually stimulate, tempt, seduce anyone who walks off the path. Strictly speaking, you can allow these honey-coated appendages to simply grip you, leaching into your system one of the most effective aphrodisiacs in nature. Slowly, decision-making is affected. Decision-making is quieted. And after a time of searching, groping, stroking, stimulating, they will attempt to induce you to suck, which by then will probably seem like a very good idea. This is per se harmless. The only potential issue is that unless you choose one of the many secluded glades immediately next to the path, you may find that you are observed by travelers going through, seen trussed up in bondage by tentacular glory, massaged, stimulated, anointed with the honey of those creatures which wish you in the most aroused state possible. The packed nutrients of sexual secretions are hyper-efficiently processed, as is the energetic movement, flailing, trembling, or climaxing of the subject. This is more than enough to keep the usually docile glades even quieter. Once someone has stepped into one, it might be days before it can pleasure you. I mean, would attempt to bind and feed from you again. So you must be sparing, even though this is, of course, inadvisable anyway. And if you do happen to see colored patterns on the vines, I would encourage you to close your eyes. That glistening, spiraling disc, often comprised of bioluminescent flower petals, they turn and spin, and when they do so, the mind can begin to wander. A wandering mind is no problem, however. It is just that you may be even more afflicted by the habit-forming and venomous aphrodisiac, or begin to enjoy where one may not have before, swaying back and forth, the slow constriction of vines, the way that the hypnodisced flowers lower, the way that the spiraling light fills your eyes, truly filling them, is one interesting feature. But these vines sometimes sway left and right, perhaps at first in response to you trying to divert your gaze left or right, but after a little while, they're right in front of your eyes, and you're following them. The mirroring response is interesting to study, and, pardon me, I suppose we shall cover more than one commensal species. As was mentioned, if you are constricted thus, the vines may be guided to your mouth, to an orifice, to something to wrap around, even to various erogenous zones. And if you give a vine the lead, the tentacular subject will begin to rub in the same location, allowing you to set them like a sex toy or a device. On the other hand, if the vines seem very insistent in tugging you along a side path, one must be wary. This indicates that a dominant species of local plant creature is present. Not the mindless, hungry seeking of the tentacular creatures at the edge of the path, who cannot pass onto its warded walkways, but rather the seeking and intelligent creatures deeper in. They were once mistaken for nymphs bathing, as the honeyed waters of their pools run over them, but these waters are part of a larger organism. And as one approaches these seductive and more evolved creatures, their green skin flashing with patterns similar to those I had mentioned being present in the hypnotic and bioluminescent flowers on the vines closest to the path, they glow from within. Their melodies, at first odd to the ear, lure one just close enough to inhale the pheromones that drip from every inch of them. And the vines not only collaborate with, but obey these creatures, even to their detriment. Deep pockets of comfortable and massaging plant matter wait under the leaves of their groves. The creatures lure you in, and when you are near and have fallen in, you are subjected to much the same treatment as near the path. But the glowing, eye-fixative quality and the dosing, habit-forming pheromone lust inhabit you quickly. And then, individually and with the skill of anyone who has used sensual congress to create their entire way of life, the creature will lick, or touch, or ride, or writhe upon you, keeping some prey items and feeding them the honey of the grove for a time. If you ask to be let free, they'll just let you free. But as so many have become lured in by the familiarity of the vines, the familiar but enhanced process of these clearings may leave you with little mental recourse. As the vines sway in those shadowed underground chambers, glistening with a honey that, though sweet to the tongue, is invigorating to the body, to see someone thrusting their hips mindlessly at the air, desperately seeking either the clutch of the vines or the lips and tongue of the Alran inhabitants of those groves. The whisper of their voices in the trees can even call their imprinted thralls back to them when they're hungry. Anyway, you will see at a distance across such a clearing, should one of the vines by the side of the path try to tug you deeper, and you let it, which you should not, of course, you'll see what seems to be a hot spring or a bathing pool with clouds of steam rising from it. The steam is really the aerosolized and brain-invading scent of these floral creatures. It beads from their breasts, from their thighs, from the drooling honey of their slits. And if you come too close, that intoxicating rush, one moment you're standing there, the next you're standing there with your hand between your legs. No idea how it happened, other than that the delectable melting of your mind, its deliquescence into more liquid for their pools, is obvious and immediate. And then you're moving closer, and maybe you will not step into any of the sinking pit traps that are their bread and butter. Snares are the tool of many a passive, slow-metabolismed predator, and they will feed on you only in the sense that when they let you go, a little piece of you will have been consumed by the writhing purple flame that burns behind their partly transparent skin, by those clouds of musk, by your face buried against them. And should you wish to attend the more advanced lecture, we do have example videos and even first-hand accounts. And I can provide my own as well. As I was saying, as an expert on them, I have, of course, been subject to their ministrations. Maybe you have as well. To move nearer and fall into a nest of tendrils that suspends you and then stands you up against the soft nest of them and begins to work you. I should tell you that they can send commands to those vines as mentioned before. What this means is, when you first inhale the musky, heady, salty sweat of those pheromones, when you first come into range and smell something delectable that awakens an appetite that has nothing to do with feeding and everything to do with being fed upon, and your hands end up between your legs, masturbating in a way they might in private and safety at home, they will watch, and they will know how you like to touch yourself, predicting by the muscular movements of your thighs, by the twitch of your buttocks, by the roll of your eyes, exactly what you would love to have done, and then having their servants milk that out of you. On these occasions, it is in your best interest to hold back, to resist climactic release, because only in so doing will you be intriguing enough or a difficult enough subject that they will involve themselves personally and up close. Hold out, deny yourself, hang on the edge of climax. The closer you are, the more they know they need to see you shiver, need to see you contort against the vines. And if you are kept for a little while, suckling at that honeyed nectar, it is all right to let some of the thoughts fall out of your head. They always release. They don't want to store anyone. And most of the predators of the corruptive forest are by now aware that they can feed on energy and substances, on the secretions you release at climax, on the chemicals that eke out of you much more efficiently. You'll leave there clean and refreshed, and any memories of floral petals glowing in lambent colors, settling dolorously around your mouth and nose, feeding you vapors to inhale, those may just be dreams, and the dreams may just be tempting, and the temptation may see you back in the wonderful stress-relieving Alron embrace, back in a forested plant's grove. They are intelligent and can carry on a conversation, so if you're someone who just wants to get one out, if climax is your goal, then resist long enough for them to come over and strike one up. You can persuade them to tease you slowly if they see that you're willing, and if they see you really want to leave, they'll just let you go. So will the vines, to be honest. It is a huge waste of energy to do anything other than tempt prey in. And I guess prey is erroneous. Partners might be more accurate. I did say these are commensal species, not just symbiotically cooperative toward one another, but incidentally cooperative toward, well, me and you. And we are much easier to train once you have been exposed to that aroma, that ache, and their perfect pleasurably slick, dripping passages in front of you when they lower themselves into the core, into that vine-filled chamber where all you may remember is pleasure and heat, their pink-petaled pussies glowing from within, the light filling your vision, sparking parts of your brain, so you remain there licking and you don't care how long. It's very sustaining. The honey they feed you is a byproduct. They can't use it, but you can. So ultimately, this is true symbiosis, where you benefit and they do. That said, you can end up slacking off from other responsibilities if you fall to the habit of falling into their clutches. It is wonderful to know that they are capable of communicating and very inclined to do it. If you can last without climaxing, if when one of those vines begins to wind around you more deftly than your hand, yet replicating your own masturbation, when they're in front of you and she's looking you in the eyes, you can talk to her and converse on many subjects. The more interesting you are, the longer you may end up teased and denied, however, and if you are kept as a conversation partner, occasionally sucking or licking her breasts, her pussy, pressed face first into her, well, that is a natural outgrowth of being so, so captivating, a feeling that you may find you share. Drinking of their substances, the honeyed liqueur that comes from their nipples, the dripping sexual fluids whose musk fills one's brain, this is normal. Doing so will only result in your returning home with the equivalent of the best possible massage, the most relaxing possible vacation. It can be quite a pleasurable process. But if you wish to avoid ending up captured and suspended by tendrils that explore your every inch, that attempt to extract pleasure from you, well, all you need do is walk carefully. You can spot the edges of the pits into which one may fall. Just avoid falling into her pits, and you'll be able to reach her and discuss with her at the edge of her hot spring. Which again, I must stress, the water seems to be water, but there is an additive of her juices, or of her pheromones, which causes it to be quite cloyingly perfumed, intoxicatingly pleasurable, manually activating processes which normally require seduction to activate. It's as if the finest, most seductive and arousing fetish you had known played out in your brain. Again, again, activating the body's system, making you ready to fuck. Pardon my language. One may buck at the empty air, thrust against a hand or against her, and they are universally interested in that process. To them, we are very difficult to place, but some part of their brains apparently regards us as universally ephemeral and gorgeous. Other creatures just don't carry the same stuff. They're almost made for us. I do have the theory that they were made a long time ago to be maximally able to feed upon us. But, as you may learn if you have been taking notes on where to go and how to meet them, when one is exposed to sustenance and pleasure and the sum totality of everything they need in a compact package, that has a habit-forming effect on the brain. The brain likes to flex along familiar muscle pathways. This is no exception. And over many, many years, they seem to have entered a process of just universally being incredibly aroused when we are near. I've theorized that that's why the pitfalls exist, so that they can approach us on their own terms, instead of being overwhelmed by a sensual and unavoidable lust for our bodies, for our fluids, for the way we look when we come our brains out. Again, for the way we look after the orgasmic plateau has given way to climactic spasm. When you're in the afterglow, you can ask for more. If you are multi-orgasmic, or if you didn't quite climax and managed to hold on through their first pleasurable, vine-laden assailing. Their mouths, their holes, their hands, their breasts, each afford different and interesting opportunities for learning. I will canvass these briefly, because field research is needed to fully understand them. Firstly, you must remember that throughout the whole process, those glowing, spinning flowers are always nearby, and they instinctively captivate your attention. This is a separate organism, not the vines nor the Alron herself. They are there just to make sure you're docile. They soak up a little bit of the sweat from your skin, the fluids from between your legs, your saliva if you suck on them. And they secrete a fluid very similar to hers, which they cannot use, but which will manually activate your limbic system, your libido, your lust, such that drinking enough of it will, 1% and 2% of the way, gradually raise a kind of response within you. This ecstatic response is similar to masturbation and adds on top of it. But even if you were not touching, once you've drank enough of it that you've reached 5%, 10%, or 15% of the way to the plateau, your body will begin to stroke itself. The voluntary muscles of the pelvic floor, of the buttocks, and even ancillary erogenous zones will all be activated chemically rather than physically. A venom or a very safe stimulant. I have heard it's used as a recreational substance, but I frown on such practices. Not because it isn't delightful and a wonderful start to an evening's masturbation, but because they know how to use it best, and imbibing it while you're staring at the pink slit amid the green thighs glowing with light from within, well, it just can't be beat, and you're missing out. Those vines will be there ensnaring you, so when she talks, you may speak quite freely, quite openly. They love moans. They love dirty talk. They can't think of it themselves. But once they've heard you use it, you might hear it again. And I'm sure they've heard plenty of it. Being kept in one of those little energy chambers and milked by vines and occasionally her herself typically means that when you emerge and wander back, your body will be satiated for some time. It's normal to lose interest in even touching, so you can save it up for her, thicker for her, your juices thicker and more pent up, drooling and grueling pleasure as your body contorts and spasms. This ecosystem in collaboration can typically cause quite a bit of local growth. They let off many byproducts they can't use. A truly enormous number of them feed the local vegetation. Where the canopy is greenest and the shadows darkest, look for that pink glow coming from between their legs, from their areolae, on dark green skin. They wait, and if you are welcome to bathe in their spring, having to orgasm till your eyes roll back is a very small price of admission. I hope to see you out there. I'm submitting my resignation later, and going back to where I was. Well, I hope this has been instructive. And in an opposite and sometimes confounding effect, if you're not uninterested in other contact, you may become hyper-interested in it. A final note I'd almost forgotten. In their increasing imitation of us, they have pleasure spots now. Once, I remember the cold, imperious gaze of an elder Alron standing over me, uninterested as I licked her clit, uncaring as I fingered where her G-spot ought to be. And now everyone I meet climaxes and loses her focus at the merest touch. Yet another reason to theorize that they may use those chambers and pitfalls to keep you from exciting them so much they surrender. I still have the theory that if you could implant a fetish in one through repeated prompting, you could help them feel as good as we do, and someone might love it. A bit of research you should only do with permission. Take care. Oh. Yeah, I need to get back out there.